America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
In your lives, you're probably tired of us at this point. It's Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Canobio. It's Chris Algieri. We are presented by PPV.com. PPV.com, world by leader in live pay-per-view events. Got some big ones coming up this summer. We are in the midst of a crazy stretch of boxing. Tank Roach are going to get back into that ring. Zou Fandora are going to get back into that ring for a second time. Manny Pacquiao, those rumors are becoming more and more like facts. He's going to step into the ring, and those will all be on PPV.com. Join us in the live interactive chat. Follow along on social media. They are proud presenting sponsors, PPV.com. Chris is coming to us from Las Vegas off the heels of the fight card of the weekend, which saw Naoya Inoue and Ramon Cardenas fight in a potential fight of the year. Inoue hits the canvas in round two. He comes back. He storms back. He wins the fight via stoppage. His 11th straight stoppage in a title fight. Ah, man, that was the good stuff on Sunday night. That was the good stuff, Chris. Are you still riding high in Vegas, or has Vegas broken you?
No, I'm. Listen, Vegas is a 72-hour city. I have overstayed my welcome.
What hour are you on?
I'm just past the 72-hour mark. Oh, I spent three nights here. My voice, you can hear. I'm hoarse. Lots of boxing, lots of talking. I'm ready to go home and sit in silence.
Well, we did four pods last week, and then here's the first to start off this week. You called, how many fights did you call? At least eight, right?
Yeah, last night was, I think, six fights last night.
I watched the interview you did with Sean Zatel while you were breaking it all down, shouting in the media center. That can't be good for your voice.
No, you can hear my voice is rattled, but it's been nonstop talking between our shows, between calling the fights, between being in loud arenas. I hosting the press conference. The weigh-in. It was super loud in there. There was a ton of people. It was hundreds of people showed up for the weigh-in. So we actually had to speak over them too. So a lot of strain on the voice. But listen, man, when the fights are as good as they were last night, it's all worth it.
Joe Tess his voice must be hurting because you didn't get to hear it. You might have heard it through your microphone and Christina's call, because that's the loudest I've ever heard Joe Tess scream during that second round, and then during Inoue's comeback and those middle rounds when they were whizzing punches and Cardenas was just narrowly missing Inoue, and it looked like it could be in the balance. It looked like any punch that Cardenas landed could stop Inoue and stop that entire train that is Naoya Inoue. But yeah, let's start there. I mean, it was the fight of the weekend is potentially fight of the year. If it could have been any weekend, this would have probably been the fight of the year. That's how good it was. Coming off of a weekend that left us wanting more, a lot of unbalanced performances Friday and Saturday, which we'll get to as well. Canelo Alvarez also fought this weekend. But yeah, let's get right into that fight. I mean, Naoya Inoue comes out and he hits the deck early, just like he did in the Neary fight. And this wasn't just some flash knockdown, Chris. He looked rocked. Mm-hmm. It looked like the right hand that Marquez landed on Pacquiao, which also came at the end of the round. The only difference is Pacquiao was knocked out cold. Inoue looked rattled, a little shot, gets back up, but his recovery powers are insanity. What were you feeling? What were the thoughts in that arena? Can you believe that second round with hard punching Cardenas?
You know, I've had the opportunity to call Cardenas' last three fights on ProBox TV, and I knew he was the goods. And I've spoken to Joel Diaz about him in fighter meetings, and he really believes in the kid. And, you know, right when we got on air, Christina asked me, she's like, you know, Cardenas, well, you know, what is his chance or shot to win here? And I go, he's an excellent counterpuncher, and he can punch hard with both hands. And we saw it, man. Not that I wasn't surprised, because obviously it was super surprising, but I was like, I kind of knew this guy had this in him. He could do that. I didn't expect him to look so good, you know, with those counter shots and how powerful he looked. But man, when Inoue went down, and dude, he's on his knees looking at his corner, and I was like, this could be it. This could really be the end. Like you said, of this Naoya Inoue train. Like I was just like, And then he just gets up and he does what he does, man. He just gets right back to work. He is something else, man. Something else. It was insane in there last night. The place went absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, the paid attendance was like just under 9,000, which is pretty good considering it was a Sunday night on Cinco de Mayo weekend with a Japanese fighter as the main event. I know they had Rafael Espinosa in there, but he's not a huge name just yet, even though, you know, he should be with the way that he fights.
Yeah, he's a star.
Oh, man. But I'm so impressed with Inoue's recovery powers. I mean, like, he's like in a video game. Like, his attributes, like, obviously power and all that and charisma would be way up. But, like, if there was a thing for recovery, it would be 100. Because now this is two fights where he's gotten up off the deck. The Neary fight as well. And he also was hurt a little early on in his career. The Donaire fight comes to mind, too, where he had the broken orbital bone and then went on to outland Donaire 3-1 down the stretch, like 95-30 or something crazy like that. Neary, he hits the canvas early, comes back to stop him. This was like that was a hard shot. That was no flash knockdown. But the way that he gets up and like stays in the pocket, and he had those two or three rounds in between the stoppage and the knockdown where he was recovered or somewhat recovered, but was also there was like inches, centimeters between some of those Cardenas shots. But that's just in a way willing to stand in the pocket and get the knife. Like, he felt like, all right, I got to get this guy out of here, which is so admirable. And why I believe he's such a special fighter is because he gets up off the canvas. He has flaws now. He is getting older at age 32, but he didn't just coast to a disputed decision at the end. He finishes these guys after, you know, it's wild to see.
You said a key word in there, Dan, willing. His willingness to take a risk of getting knocked out to knock you out is what makes him so special. Because like you said, most guys, if they get hit with a shot like that early on and they have that much riding on them, like, listen, in a way, he can't lose, dude. The pressure that's on him is so crazy. You know, like, the pressure that's on him, most guys, when that happens, they get a little more cautious. They get on their jab. He doesn't. He goes on kill mode. He starts, he's stalking. You hurt him, he turns into, he tightens up his guard, he puts himself out there, and he goes on stalk mode. He's like, I'm getting it back, and I'm going to get it back worse. I can't say more good things about him. He's an absolute warrior. In the fighter meetings yesterday, actually two things. I thought about this while you were talking. You mentioned his recuperative powers and our guy Nonito Donaire. So he was co-hosting the weigh-in with me on Saturday. And one of the major things that he wanted to get across to everyone when he spoke about how good Naoya Inoue was, he goes, he's like, yeah, the power's there. He hits really hard. If you blink, you know, you're going to sleep. But he's like, he's so tough. He's like, I remember hitting him with shots and being like, hey, and he's still coming. And he's like, I don't think people give him enough credit for how tough he actually is. And he had to show that once again last night with Cardenas. And then also in the fighter meetings, we asked him what his favorite thing about fighting was. He said brawling. Would you think of a pound-for-pound great guy with him, with fundamentals that he has, Japanese, like, I mean, talking to him, he's like a scholar, like, would say brawling is his favorite thing to do?
I think no, and I think we're seeing that now more and more because his last couple of fights have been brawls.
Like, yeah, he wants to go to war.
Yep, he dominated early on in his career because he was just so much better. And as he's now moving up and as he's getting a little bit older, he's finding himself in more brawls. And that Donaire fight was the first Donaire fight.
War, absolute war.
And you got to give Donaire credit because he pushed Inoue to the brink, and that was when Inoue was in his chronological prime. But yeah, he's a brawler, and he's everything you want the pound-for-pound fighter to be. And there are some detractors out there. I'm not going to spend too much time on them, but like, oh my God, he got dropped again. He got dropped by a Lyft driver. Ramon Cardenas drove a Lyft. That is more indicative on the business side of boxing, that someone like Cardenas has to go out and take other jobs rather than a shot at his skills, because he showed that he is world-class, Ramon or Cardenas. He is world-class. But there are some detractors out there, but with Inoue, they're always going to be there because they just can't deal with the fact that the pound-for-pound guy is a smaller fighter from Japan who they don't know who he fought because they're just ignorant. But he's everything that's right with boxing. He's everything that should be your pound-for-pound guy. Like, he has some flaws. Like, listen, Oscar and Tito Trinidad come to mind. Those guys were top pound-for-pound guys in the late 90s and early 2000s, they got knocked down. Like, they were in good fights. Like, they entertained. They got knocked down. They had a few flaws, but they finished the show for the most part, and they won their fights. And that's what Inoue is now. He's now a brawler. Like, in addition to have sublime skills, it's must-watch TV because you might see him hit the canvas, and you know for damn sure he's going to probably knock the guy out after that. And to me, that's a recipe for a fight of the year. When both guys hit the canvas,
yep,
that's like a rare thing in boxing these days.
Yeah, to go back and forth that way. I mean, it is a true battle, and last night was a battle. And listen, just like you said, those punches that were just missing, it was like there was like silence in there when those shots were flying, because you were like, oh, this could be it. That could be the shot. And it was just back and forth. It was everything. Like you said, it's everything that's right about boxing was that fight last night. Two guys who are absolute warriors who were just locked in. Yo, Cardenas, he showed world-class poise last night, staying in the pocket, looking for those counters. He got a little too left hook happy, but honestly, the jab of Inoue really disarmed Cardenas from being able to do anything else, and he's spending more and more time on the ropes. And listen, we tip our hat to Joel Diaz in the corner. I don't know how much you could hear about him.
Showed him a bunch.
He was fantastic. Everything he said in the corner, I could hear him. I was right behind him. Was spot on, right on the money. Exactly how you want a coach to talk in moments like that. Everything he said was very concise. He didn't give too much information. He told him exactly what he wanted to do. He told him the left hook before he dropped him. Told him. Joel Diaz goes, hey, Ramon, when he fires that right hand, I want you to come back with the left hook. I don't care if it's to the head or the body. Just throw that motherfucker. He's like, and throw it hard. He said just like that. He's like, I don't care. He said, I don't care if you throw it to the head or the body. Just throw that motherfucker and throw it hard. And I was like, and end of the round, bing, hits him and goes down. I was like, he literally just said that. I mean, that's good coaching. And then later, as the rounds are going on and Cardenas was starting to wilt a little bit, you could see the fight getting beaten out of him. The rattling shots from Inoue were adding up. Right before the last round stoppage, Joel says, he goes, hey man, I'm going to stop this soon. You're getting hit too much. It's too much damage. Yeah. I need you to show me more. I need you to come forward. He's like, when you're coming forward, you're going to win this fight. But you know, that's
the one power thing. Was too much. I mean, Inoue,
the jab was too much. The power.
Well, do you think it was an early stoppage? There was some debate about that. I think it was borderline. I think Thomas Taylor is one of the best refs. He's probably awesome. The best ref in all of boxing. I don't think it was an early stoppage. I think it was right on time. I think Cardenas would have been taken absolute punishment. He wasn't exactly punching back. I know a lot of those shots weren't flush. I'm fine with it. It was borderline. But the other side of it is we see Cardenas get blasted out. And then we don't get to see him again. We don't get to see him potentially. I want to see him fight like Lewis Neary. I want to see him fight a ton of other guys at 122. So I was fine with the stoppage. I understand both sides of the coin. Like you want to the competitive nature of that fight. Probably if he didn't stop it, I wouldn't have been like, oh my God, the ref should have stopped it. So where did you lean there?
So initially, as I saw the stoppage, I was like, damn, too early. But in the context of everything that was going on, I think the stoppage was perfect. If Joel Diaz had not said what he said in the corner, when, you know, Joel cares about his guy. And he also understands that his guy's in this fight and they came to win. When he tells you the round before, I'm going to stop it. That put it in my mind that like, he knows his fighter. He knows his fighter's taking a lot of damage. And those shots, Dan, they were rattling. Those are like brain rattling shots. Every jab that Inoue throws is a power jab. It's like a right hand. Just bing, bing, bing. All those shots are adding up. And you saw when Cardenas did go down, it wasn't a single shot. It was an accumulation of those bone rattling, teeth rattling shots. Those do damage and long term damage. So I think the decision was to stop it at the time was actually perfect because, like you said, this kid showed that he belongs in the room and he's going to get more big shots. I'd rather him live to fight another day. And I know that's like a grave way to say it, but I want to see him be as this good with other guys because, listen, it's Inoue. Yeah, Cardenas fought great. He showed up. I think he did the best that he could possibly do, but he was just fighting Naoya anyway. The guy is just otherworldly. He's a generational talent. So I want to see Cardenas, that version of Cardenas. I want to see him with those other guys. It's exactly like you said.
Well, a great example of what the other side of the coin is Edward Vasquez in the fight beforehand. I thought that should have been stopped a lot earlier. I thought his corner should have stepped in. Nothing worse than a brave corner. Nothing worse than when your corner is just too brave because these guys are warriors. They're never going to throw in the towel themselves. the corner is supposed to throw in the towel. But yeah, for Ramon Cardenas, good. I mean, this guy couldn't have been more happy for him. Seems like a great dude.
Always fantastic. He's such a good kid.
Fought his way up the right way. You can respect how he got to this level. And then on the biggest stage after the weekend we had, he said, I'm going to throw down with the greatest in the world right now, and I'm going to give it my all. And the thing when you're fighting anyways, you're on borrowed time. Like, he drops him. He drops him early, and then he had maybe two or three more rounds where, all right, if I don't get this guy out of here, I'm eventually going to get it. And that's got to be a crazy feeling as a fighter, just like knowing that this freak in front of me is just like recovering and just like, you know, that some power shots are going to be whizzing by. And he was on borrowed time, and he just ran out of time. I felt, that's how I felt watching. It's like, it's only a matter of time before Inoue pins him against the ropes or lands something of note and slows this guy down. But you're right. I want to see him like Luis Neri versus Ramon Cardenas, like, would be fire.
Fireworks.
Like, any
fireworks.
Of these guys, anyone that Inoue has beaten in the last like two or three years, I want to see him in the ring with Cardenas. Like, just do that and put it, like, someone should scoop him up. I know he's with
yes, Pro Box? A Pro Box TV fighter. Yes, Pro Box TV fighter.
Great. So let's get this guy going, because we have to start rewarding these fighters that lay it all out there. And I think that's one thing we learned this weekend.
To your point, when they did the in the ring interview with Ramon, and they asked about the power, and he goes, listen, it wasn't any single shot. Yeah, he hits hard. Yes, the power was there. He was like, but really, and he made up a word that I really loved. It was the overwhelmingness.
Oh, I love making up words.
Of overwhelming. I know you do. This is a good one. We're going to add this one to the lexicon.
Who said
this? Overwhelmingness. Ramon. In the ring, Cardenas.
Great word.
Overwhelmingness. He's like, yeah, I was more the overwhelmingness of Inoue's attack. He's like, he was just constantly on me. And it's just, and just like, to your point, like, you're on borrowed time when you're in there with him, because, you know, my old fight club saying, on a long enough timeline, everyone's survival rate goes to zero. That's how it is dealing with a guy like Inoue. Because, listen, 12 rounds is a long time. It's not that long, you know? So he's out there to get you out of there. But incredible showing by both these guys, and we really got to be aware of how special a guy like Inoue is. Dan, I'd never been that close to him. I've called his fights before, but I called him in the bubble, so I wasn't like on the ring like I was this time.
Oh, and so sick, bro!
Watching him walk in, and you've met him, of course, and you've been around
briefly.
Him. Yeah, but like, it doesn't matter what I'm talking about.
He has aura. He has aura.
That's exactly my point. I'm talking about the aura that this man has. When he was walking to the ring, you could there was a palpable energy shift in the room. It was like, whoa, this guy's here. And he's like a really small guy, dude. Like, I took a picture with him. I couldn't believe, like, he's a really small guy, but his power, his aura is just like, It's weird. It's a weird feeling to be around a guy like that. He is a legit rock star and a super athlete.
He's an all-time great. I mean, he's everything. All the superlatives are there. It's not glazing. It's literally legitimately just praising a guy that's different. Like, you're he's different. Like, these guys are in a different air. Like, I was around Usyk this past week at the Undisputed video game event. He has a different air about him. He is an all-time. There's not many of them. It's a handful of like these guys that are just special, and they come along and you need to appreciate them. And Inoue probably has two or three more years of peak, you know, maybe even not. I want to talk about that. Like, yeah, he has gone down now in two of his last three fights. He's 32 years old. The wear and tear on his body, the amount of weight classes that he has jumped, the training camps, the pressure now of being the face of an entire country, and not just country, an entire like area. Him and Ohtani are the face over there in the Far East. Yeah. He's the face. Him and Ohtani. So, like, are you seeing some signs of slippage? We can ask that, because he is going down in these fights. We do have to mention that he is bouncing back and winning via stoppage, but I can't not see him. He's susceptible to being hit because he's so willing to stand and trade.
I don't see slippage. So, quick answer to that question. I think that we're just seeing him look more human as he moves up in weight. And we got two definitive answers from him in the fighter meeting. Because a guy like him who is, like I said, a rock star and a superstar the way that he is. They're so media trained. You can't get any real answers out of guys like that. They're so used to getting asked a million questions and we're trying to get something out of them and they don't want to give you anything. Anyways, kind of that guy. But we did get two definitive answers from him in the fighter meetings on Saturday. Featherweight is as high as he will go. He will not fight beyond 126. And 35 years of age is the last time he'll fight. So he even understands. That's an acknowledgement to me that he's human, right? Him saying that. He's like, I can't go higher than 26, even though there's going to be massive boatloads of money at 130 if Tank wanted to come down or if Lomachenko wanted to come down. We asked both of those. Neither one of those got anything out of him. There was no response.
He's been asked so much about it.
Yeah, nothing. That to me tells you. He's realistic. Yeah.
He also said after the fight that he as long as he can make 122, he's going to keep making. He's in no rush to even go to 126.
Yeah.
And I was fine with that because I think there are some really fun fights still at 122. There's a slew of Japanese fighters below him at the lower weights, Nakatani most notably.
He brought up Nakatani.
Fights. He brought him
up. He was naming names. Oh, absolutely. He said MJ and he said Nakatani. He still has work to do at 22, and he wants Nakatani at 22.
So MJ's next, which is crazy.
Yes.
September. Like that's another great fight, and that's another one that a lot of casual fans know that name.
That's a good fight.
He's not in a rush to go to 126 because even 126, I feel like those guys can crack. And I mean, look at Espinoza. Look at all those guys can punch. And now
I think he's gonna have trouble at 26.
So do I. Like, I could see him losing. Like, last night I thought I was going to see in the second round. I was like, all right, if he's legit hurt, or he looked hurt for the 8 seconds he was on the canvas. And I was like, this is the beginning of the end, or this is the beginning of, like, we're watching his high point right here.
Yeah, he's over the quote-unquote hill.
Right. If he would have lost that fight, obviously, or if he would have, you know, skated to a decision or a disputed decision and he didn't come and knock him out. But yeah, well, 122, you have Akhmadaliyev, and technically that's like pretty much the last guy at 122 that he hasn't beat and like the fans are clamoring for. But if he's not in a rush to go up to 126 and he doesn't take the crazy Saudi money that's probably awaiting him at 126, you know, there are a bunch of names, Japanese fighters at 122 and below. Nakatani's the big one. That's the Super Bowl. Yeah. That would be massive fights. Like I appreciate him coming over here to the States, but you know, 8,000 is not enough in terms of to watch this guy. Over in Japan, we're looking at a Canelo type guy.
Tokyo
we're looking at a Joshua type guy. We're looking at the biggest
80,000. Yeah.
Right. So he's leaving tons of money and he can just stay over there and fight these Japanese fighters and have fighters come to him. But I do think there's going to be that pull from Saudi. I do believe that he will go to 126 at some point. You know, he is only 32, quote unquote. So he has time still to fight at 122. And then I can maybe see in a year, 18 months. Like they're talking about December. They're talking about this. We always talk about these big time fighters that have their careers planned
schedules.
Out.
Schedules. Like, yeah.
Canelo has this planned out with Crawford and some of these other guys. Like, same thing with Inoue. Like, we got Akhmadaliyev in September, and the plan was for him to fight again in December at Featherweight in Saudi Arabia, potentially against Nick Ball. That's crazy. That's a lot. That's a lot for a guy that's has a lot of wear and tear. So, I don't know, man. Maybe he stays at 122 now, and I think fans should be okay with that, but they won't. They'll be upset with that.
You made me think of something he said in the fighter meetings because he did mention money. So you mentioned the potential for Saudi money and dragging him up to 126 even before he wants to go. He did speak about money and things about where he can fight. Because there's a lot of questions about why you're fighting in the States. He doesn't need to. We spoke about that. But he was excited about fighting in T-Mobile. He thought that name was something that was important to him. Being introduced to the U.S. fans seemed to be important to him. But also he said that he brought his chef because he had problems with the food last time, that he wanted to test out his chef and training for when they're on the road for Saudi. So obviously that's something that's out there.
Fight in Saudi Arabia. He's going to
No, but he also said, Arabia. He said, listen, if you're going to pay me double, triple, 10 times the amount of money, of course I'm going to go anywhere. You know, he didn't say specifically Saudi, but like, of course I'm going to do anything. Money does matter. Yeah. Money does matter. Especially at 32 years of age, you're looking at 3 years left on his career And for a guy like him, which what you were saying, Dan, when you got those guys who get to a certain level where they're scheduled, that's when you become a business. The and I'm going to move backwards in time now. Crawford actually never was that guy. He still had to scramble even at the end of his career. But the scheduling of these guys' records of careers, the Canelo Alvarez's, the Floyd Mayweather's, the Oscar De La Hoya's, when you knew every May and September Floyd Mayweather was fighting, you know, every May and September Canelo Alvarez is fighting, and in a way is such a G. He fights three, sometimes four times a year. On a breakneck schedule, and he's fighting dogs. He's a business. He is an economy in and of itself. So it's crazy to think that he could be even making more money with the opportunities that are out there. But I don't know, man. We gotta cherish what's left of this man's career because we are coming down. You know, he mentioned 35. He's not gonna fight after 35. That's only a couple years away. So every time this guy fights, we need to understand what the hell we're watching and need to appreciate what he is, because someone like him is not coming around anytime soon.
No, he's so special. And maybe four or five fights left, or five fights tall, max left in his career. Yeah, cool to see him in Vegas. Cool to see him do the with the American media. I saw Fight Hub got some interviews. Najee from Cigar Talk got some stuff. That's good. That's good. Get this guy over here and get him so we can win over some of these detractors out there. It's not many. He's you know, there's a few idiots out there that don't appreciate Inoue and everything is about, but you can't really focus on them. But how about this? I mean, back-to-back weekends with potential fight of the year candidates. Eubank Ben in the UK was amazing show, potentially fight of the year. And now fast forward to this weekend, we have Inoue and Cardenas just laying it all out on the line. Those got to be the top one and two. Interchange them how you want for 2025 fight of the year, at least the clubhouse leaders right now.
Yeah, obviously the much higher level this weekend, you know, last night, much higher level with Cardenas and Inoue. But yeah, back-to-back great weekends, back-to-back, gotten the world ablaze. And, you know, I said this in an interview yesterday after the show, I was like, man, boxing fans, we're funny because we can have bad nights, bad weeks, bad months, you know, bad years, and we'll take our lumps. We can get beat up. We can get black eyes. We can get robbed. We get all those things. But if we have one good night, we're back. We're back, baby. Like, as upset as I was Saturday night, you know, on the tail of the Friday and Saturday fights, as upset as I was that, you know, those nights, and I was feeling like a little emotional about it. You know, like, it's like, this is my sport. I was the exact opposite last night. I was buzzing. I was like walking on air after the fight, doing interviews, and I was like, I love this sport so much, and this is what it's all about. When you've got guys who are putting on the line the way that these two guys did last night, and I know we're basically only talked about Inoue and Cardenas. The rest of that card rocked.
Yeah,
that was a good show, man. Yeah, let's go into that because it was a great card. Fun.
Rafael Espinoza stops Edward Vasquez.
What a beast! What a beast!
Espinosa is getting better and better every time I see him out there. Just calculated, throwing a ton of punches, power behind those shots. Edward Vasquez, tougher than a $2 steak. This guy was just...
I literally said that. I said that on air.
Yeah. Great line. I love using that
such
line.
A good line. And he's a Texan, too, so it's even better.
I remember calling some of his fights on the Broadway boxing circuit, and he's just a little too tough for his own good.
Yeah,
but Espinosa is a beast at 126. I mean, he is getting better and he's coming into his prime physically and with his age. I mean, he is like going to be an extremely tough out at featherweight if he wants to stay there or if he wants to move up to 130.
All those sentiments I completely agree with. Again, I'm going to go into the fighter meetings because I had access to these guys yesterday. What an incredible human. I mean, just super passionate about the sport. And Tim Bradley's so good in the fighter meeting because he asks real questions that cut deep into fighters. And he asked Espinosa, like, do you fight for yourself or do you fight for your people? And he got emotional immediately.
Yeah, I heard.
And he said, you know, I fight for both, which is a great answer. Like, of course, he's fighting for himself and his family. But his people are behind him, the way that they showed out for him. No one fights as hard as he does just for themselves. He has to be fighting for his legacy, for his people. The way that he trains, the way that he lives, the way that he fights. The fact that he's 6'1" and makes 126 is mind-blowing to me. His discipline has to be off the charts. Because I've seen him off. He's big. Like, he fills in. Like, he's not just a skinny guy who makes weight easy. No, he really works to get there. And his gas tank is through the roof. I mean, his endurance that he showed last night with a guy who's super, super tough. And just, he had nothing for him. I'm very, very impressed with him. I've gone as far as to say that he's my favorite young champion in the world today.
Wow. I mean, I agree. I mean, he's up there.
There's nothing not to like. He makes entertaining fights. He's got a great gas tank. He can punch hard. He looks for knockouts. He's super, super nice. He's like a statesman when you talk to him. He's passionate. He's Mexican. I mean, what don't you like about that guy?
Nothing. And he cares. I mean, they told a story about him breaking down, when it comes to fighting in front of his people, which is, that just says everything. And the Mexicans just love that stuff. They eat that up. Like, a guy that really cares about his fans. Will he stay at featherweight is the question. He is a champion. The other champions are Nick Ball, Stephen Fulton, Angelo Leo. I would love to see him fight any of those names. I think Espinosa versus Ball would be a wild fight in terms of just like the sheer physics of it.
Yep.
The physics of it will be crazy. Both come forward fighters. I think they're 1 and 2. I think Ball and Espinosa are 1 and 2 at featherweight. Fulton very close behind them. You could potentially have Fulton over Ball or Espinosa if you prefer that style of fighting, but there's Carrington could potentially fight Espinosa. Yep,
Bruce Shushu was in the crowd. He was watching along.
That guy's everywhere.
He's everywhere. Everywhere all the time. I think he stays at 26. Except if he gets dragged up to 30 by Navarrete. Because you've got
fighting this weekend.
Yeah, he's fighting this weekend against Charlie. What is it? Why am I forgetting his name?
I'm Charlie, not prepared for that. So I don't know who he's fighting. I saw the thing come up on the screen.
I lost you. What the hell?
I'm here.
Wait, hold on. I can't hear you now.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Why does it do this?
1, 2, and a 3, and a 4. 1, 2, and a 3, and a 4.
My alarm went off on my phone.
And
it connected to my AirPods, so it cut me out of.
You got me now?
Yeah, I got you.
All right, so you were saying, I can hear you.
What's his name? Charlie Suarez? Suarez. Right?
Yeah, you could just start with that. You could say that Navarrete's fighting blank.
Yeah. Navarrete's fighting Charlie Suarez, a guy I've actually called his last couple fights, who's improved quite a bit. But I don't know. Navarrete, I think he's still got a lot of juice left in him. And that's a fight I think that Top Rank obviously would be angling for. A Navarrete versus Espinosa fight just makes way too much sense. It's basically a Mexican changing of the guard, but it's also potential to be an absolutely cracker of a fight. But if not that, then I think that Espinosa stays at 26 to make all those fights that you had mentioned.
All right. It's time to move over to a fight we saw on Saturday night. Canelo Alvarez gets a decision over William Skull. It's not Skull. We were saying Skull in the whole lead-up. It's William Skull. Who hopefully we never have to see him fight ever again, because the guy just didn't even try to win the fight. It had all sorts of records, the wrong records, in terms of lowest combined punches thrown a 12-round fight ever in the history, 40-year history of CompuBox. Canelo threw the second lowest total of punches in any 12-round fight in any weight class in the history of CompuBox. It was a wacky fight. Canelo was coming forward, and I guess that won him the fight because they were pretty much dead even on connects, 56 to 55. Majority of Canelo's landed punches were to the body. Majority of Skull's landed punches were jabs. He just was visibly moving around in that ring so much where it was kind of a strange fight to score. Like, I thought Canelo won just strictly because he was the one that was coming forward, because there weren't a lot of punches to choose from. I mean, the 118-109 was a little too wide, but it was just a strange, strange fight. It was probably Canelo's one of his worst performances, maybe ever. I'm just glad we could put it in the rear view and we can look forward to Canelo Crawford, which was announced after. Like, what did you make of that fight? Like, how did you, like, what were your feelings after it and during it? Because I was like, what am I watching here? This is bizarre. I felt like a fever dream.
Yeah, it was odd. And listen, I didn't expect a whole lot from this fight. This wasn't a highly anticipated matchup by anyone. I expected Skull to I don't know, try harder. I don't know. I was talking to Robert Garcia about this last week on one of our Pro Box shows, and he was saying that he's like, he expected Canelo to go out there and stop Skull and get you know, a long awaited stoppage win that he hasn't had in a long time. But even Canelo, like, he, I don't think he looked great either. He didn't look like himself. He didn't look fast. He didn't look explosive. He looked a little listless. Is it the travel? Is it the time change? I don't know. Is he just 33? You know, like, there's a distinct drop off, you know, in age, and the drop offs are, like, it's not like you gradually get old. Like, you get old, you know, those things change. I remember my own career. I remember me at 33 changing dramatically. So I don't know if that's it. I don't know if it's too early to say that, but it definitely left a lot to be desired. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be changing their picks for that fight in September. With Terrence Crawford, right?
Yeah, a lot of things.
It's got to be the internet must be ablaze talking about that.
It's becoming more of a pick 'em fight, and
yeah, especially when you're seeing them next to each other, and they're like, huh. You know, well, Crawford doesn't look
the same height. I always said that
Crawford
same
doesn't look that much smaller than him.
Right. We've both been around both of them. They're pretty much the same height. It was just that Canelo is just so much thicker and stockier.
Yeah.
Going back to just the fight and everything about Canelo, like, he didn't. Someone mentioned this on the broadcast that he wasn't carrying as much muscle. His body looked different. He looked different from the Berlanga fight to this one. Yes. He didn't look as stock. He didn't look as, like, ripped. I don't know if that's a decision. I don't know what that was. Probably was a decision. Everything at this level, when you're that high of an athlete, high-class athlete, everything's a decision. So maybe that was something that he wants to come in a little with less muscle on him. There's a lot of factors that go into performances and results of fights. I think that's something we learned over this last weekend. We've touched on the fighter pay, with maybe they're getting too much money. We've touched on environments that's affecting fighters. We touched on all sorts of things to figure out why fighters come out and fight the way they do, or why we see what we do. You can say all those things about this fight. You can say, yes, this is a fighter that's 33 and has been around for a really long time, fighting in Saudi Arabia for the first time at 6, 7 a.m. in the morning. Not much of a crowd in attendance for it after fighting for practically your entire career in front of huge crowds. Fighting a guy that's going to stick and move in there, which is a very tricky, tricky style to fight. Canelo is also short. He's flat-footed. He has short legs. Like, that's what we saw. Also, a massive fight coming down the pike with Crawford. So maybe not taking as many risks. Like, this can all go into the sauce. Like, you can – it's not just one thing. There's a lot of variables. Like, these guys are humans. We're all humans. So you're thinking of all this different stuff, and everything comes into play. And I think that's what we saw on Saturday night with Canelo and Skull. Like, the reason why such low outputs, the reason why we were, like, left wanting more, is you have a guy that was in Skull that wasn't even trying to engage. Like, that's one of the worst examples I've ever seen of a guy surviving and just not even trying to win, mixed with the fact that Canelo is who he is at this point. He doesn't have that killer instinct, doesn't seem to have it anymore. Wasn't able to even drop Skull. But I do think that the broadcast was a little too leaning on putting the blame on Skull. And, like, where was some of the criticism on Canelo not being able to cut off a ring at this level in your career, or taking the fight, or pinning him against the ropes and doing a little bit more? Like, you're Canelo Alvarez. Like, I was expecting at some point for him to land something of note and give us a moment. There was no moments for Canelo. And I think that we need to talk about that a little bit, is that he did not look great in this fight. And now with the Crawford fight, there's a lot of people straight up picking Crawford off of how Canelo looked. Like, you're only as good as your last performance in this sport. And Canelo did not look great, albeit all of the reasons that I just gave. So, yeah, like, that Canelo-Crawford fight is going to be, or at least the fans are going to think it's closer than it actually could be, which is good for the promotion. But, yeah, I think there's a lot that went into that fight, and it was bizarre. Everything about it was bizarre. Didn't feel like a Canelo fight.
Yeah, you made some really good points about why or what could have gone into the factors and whatnot. But, you know, talking to people last night after the fights and doing interviews, a lot of people are switching their picks and they're picking Crawford, because, listen, if that version of Canelo, he'd look different. His movement was different. His body was different. His attitude was different. Everything was different. That version of Canelo probably does lose to Crawford. because I don't know, man. Crawford, he is a dog and a competitor, and he doesn't play around. I don't think Canelo's going to show up like that. I think that, you know, he had what he had in front of him, and he knew what it was and what he wasn't, and he understands that Crawford is not the same thing as William School. So I do think we're going to get a different version of Canelo, but like you said, I mean, in terms of the public perception, you're only as good as your last fight. And that's the last fight we're going to see Canelo before he steps into the ring with Crawford. So, yeah, those lines are going to change, man. Those picks are going to change. The promotion is going to change. Honestly, it's probably a good thing.
No, it's really
good thing.
It's a good thing for the promotion. This is now the cat is out of the bag. TKO Boxing will be promoting Canelo Crawford September 12th, which is a Friday night, Allegiant Stadium. They're doing it on a Friday night so they don't compete with college football. Allegiant Stadium wasn't available on Saturday for a UNLV game. You know, you can make your arguments why or why not they wouldn't just do it on a Saturday, but Dana White will be promoting this event. TKO Boxing, which is the big-time company that has WWE and UFC under it, will also be cross-promoting this event. It's their first foray into the sport. And you're right, Chris, they have a lot to deal with. They have two of the biggest names in the sport. Casual boxing fans, sports fans, know Terrence Crawford and they know Canelo Alvarez. And it's potentially going to be on Netflix, which, you know, there should be a ton of eyeballs on this fight. But yeah, the promotion's going to be different. And there's going to be people. When's the last time Canelo, I guess Bivol, when's the last time the lines were this close? I don't even think the lines were that close for the Bivol fight because no one really knew who Bivol was or didn't really give him a chance. But yeah, I think like you can make these points that, you know, Crawford, the only thing when it comes down to Crawford in this fight is, does he have enough power to stop Canelo from coming forward? Yeah. That's the main thing for me is if Crawford has shown a ton of power, obviously he has a KO streak or he had a KO streak at welterweight, did not get it at 154, and he won't be fighting from now until September. So the last we saw of Canelo was not a great performance, and we have not seen Crawford, which can be a good thing or a bad thing. When it comes to people making your picks, it's probably a good thing, because if Crawford went in there again and didn't look great, or, you know, had a guy like Madrimov push him to the edge, you know, we make it even more of an even fight. But there's a little bit of mystery around Crawford and what he can do it at 168. But yeah, I think Canelo will come in a lot different to the Crawford fight. I mean, he'll be a lot more motivated. I mean, this could cement him. Even Crawford's a smaller guy. This could cement Canelo, won his last signature win, unless he doesn't get in there with Benavidez and all those other guys. I don't think he's going to get in there with Benavidez, guys, after what we saw from Canelo.
Someone asked me about that. They're like, oh, do you think there's a shot that Canelo, after this fight, would get on Benavidez? I'm like, no, that ship has sailed. The window for Benavidez and Canelo is off.
Well, how much are we putting this? How much are we putting this on Skull and his what he did in there, or how much are we putting this on a diminished Canelo? Like, what if there was like a graph? Like, what would you need more?
It's probably both. This, you know,
but who's at fault more here, or what should be the conversation today? Like, what should be the barbershop conversation, the water cooler conversation? Man, Canelo is slipping. Or can you believe that Skull? Man, that guy danced. No way Canelo could look good against him.
I mean, both. It's really hard to fight guys like that who don't want to engage. And Skull, you know, he's big, he's long, he's athletic, he can move a little bit, he was a little bit tricky. And listen, I was watching some tape of him getting ready for this fight. I'm like, this guy's a bit of a stinker. And he really stunk it out. But Canelo, at this stage of your career, you know, as much experience as he's had, he's fought stinkers before. And, you know, there's ways to cut off the rings. There's ways to get those guys to force them to fight you. And we just didn't see the urgency from Canelo. And that, again, could be all the factors you talked about. Maybe this was one of those, let's just get past tonight so we can get to September. That's how I'm looking at it. I have to. Otherwise, I'm going to be a really upset person. So I'm going to look at this like Canelo is thinking, listen, let me just – all right, this guy doesn't really want to engage. This guy doesn't want to fight. I'm going to win. But on September, we're going to have a proper fight. And we'll just look forward to that, because I don't think Canelo cares. He's got the fight lined up. He's going in now as unified champion, as undisputed. Makes that fight that much bigger, which is exactly what this fight was for. It was almost parliamentary, you know, this fight. You know, no one expected Skull to be able to win. But we did expect him to try.
Yeah, I expected him to show a little more. Like, hey, this is my moment. I'm fighting Canelo. Win, lose, or draw. If I put on a good performance, maybe I can get myself another fight. There will be some interest in my career moving forward. I don't think there's any interest. I think he damaged his career I mean, I talked about how I thought Haney damaged his career moving forward. William Skull, like, no one ever wants to see you fight again, bro. Like, go back into wherever you came from, because that was bad, bro. That's like, I'm starting to get offended by these performances. Like, in the past, I'd be like, oh, it's a sport. It's a tough, it's a brutal sport. If you want to fight like that, you know, that's fine. But no, bro, like these are huge stages. Like, the Times Square card was a huge stage. This was still a big stage with Canelo on it. You're fighting the number one face of the box in the sport. You got to come out and fight better than that. You make a decision in there. Stand and trade, man. Like, Canelo, he has power, but he's not like, this isn't Canelo of 5, 6, 7 years ago. I was offended by that performance. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
A lot of people were, and it was very disheartening. It was I felt despair after the fight. I was tired. It was late. I was tired. I was just like, ugh.
I think I just like hit the power button and just was like, that's it. I didn't say any word. Just went to bed. Like, it was just,
and just power. You powered the TV down and then you powered down and just, you know.
The only thing that, like, we got the Canelo Crawford. We got the Canelo Crawford announcement. And that was a big theme this weekend was, you know, bigger fights to come down after, you know, these tune-up types of fights. That's what this was. This was a tune-up, even though it was for Undisputed. They had to. That was the reasoning they made this fight. I mean, Canelo was supposed to fight Jake Paul this weekend on Netflix, and the last second, Turkey swooped in and gave Canelo more money to fight William Skull, and which was going to be Undisputed, which sets up an Undisputed fight now, which I don't 100% think had to make Crawford Canelo even more sellable. But now it will be an Undisputed title on the line for Canelo versus Crawford. In September. That's why this fight happened. A number of reasons why this fight happened, but that's one of the main ones, is like, oh, we want Canelo to get his belt back that he was stripped of for no good reason at all by the IBF. IBF's coming out not looking great here, and that's your champion. I mean, you got a gift for Shishkin, and then he goes in there and stinks it up with Canelo. But I think, yeah, number one blame goes to Skull for how he fought. And then close number two is Canelo also disappointed me with, like, I was expecting a guy of his caliber to figure it out and, you know, stop him or at least land something.
Step on it. Yeah, just I don't know. Left a lot to be desired.
Oof.
I'm getting sad again. I'm gonna go watch anyway.
Thank God, man. And that boxing, that was an awesome night Sunday. That was just like, you couldn't write a script like this. I mean, for this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we're at the end of it. This is it. It's over now. It's in the rearview mirror. We were hyping it up for weeks. I think all boxing fans were looking forward to this weekend. And you couldn't write a script. If I was going to tell you, okay, the Friday night fights were all going to be bad, and then Canelo was going to set records for the lowest output ever, and we're going to scratch our heads after a Canelo fight. But Sunday night, Inoue is going to get dropped, but he's going to come back and win. That's a script. Like, it was a wild ride, and that's what you get as boxing fans. You're on a ride. Good, bad, Dan, and ugly.
Dan, I don't want to say, I hate saying I told you so, but we all said it. You and I said, you know, who is the opportunity to steal the show this weekend? It was Naoya Inoue, and sure enough, he did. I mean, he didn't have very stiff competition in terms of what he had to overcome, with those other two cards and other fights.
But last lick.
Man, he had last licks, dude. That you know, having that being the main event, having that opportunity to be the last fight of the night, so that everybody can talk about it this week. I mean, the guy delivered, and that's what he does. He delivers. He delivers. He delivers. All right, I'm back in the good graces of boxing now. I feel good talking about Inoue.
Yep, Inoue got the last licks. He was the bottom of the ninth, and he hit a walk off home run. And he went, "Look at me!" And I like how he didn't like rub it in the face. He's like, "Yeah, I watched the Canelo fight. I believe mine was the best." So, I mean, this is what we're going to do in the sport. We're going to compare. We're going to look at everything. What a weekend. What a week. We move on to bigger and better. There's a lot more out there in the boxing world coming our way. Maybe settle down a little bit. Get back to a little bit of normalcy with some pretty good fights next week, which aren't going to be as big in terms of the cards and all the expectations around them. But get back to a little bit of normalcy and some good fights, Chris.
Yeah, and then people don't have to see us every single day talking for an hour about each and every fight that's going on. This week has been this is a serious, serious week.
I think I told my dad or someone, I was like, this is the most work I've ever done in one week in terms of boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Like 4 or 5 podcasts, and disclaimer, I'm not complaining. This is the best job in the world. I'm just taking you a little bit behind the scenes. 4 or 5 podcasts, like, I post them all. I go through all the clips. I edit all the clips and do all that. That's fun. But it was like, damn, 4 or 5 of these. And then on top of it was a fight week in New York. a lot of content doing that stuff for Undisputed. And then, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, actually watching the fights and stuff. It was awesome. It was a great week. I love doing this. And now we're on to the next, heading to Orlando for Most Valuable Prospects. Another weekend of fights. The fight world doesn't stop. We never stop. Check yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up. Oh, wait, go ahead. Go ahead. Last thing. Say it, Chris.
It doesn't stop and we don't sleep, man. That's it. That's us, man.
Check yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Get some sleep, Chris.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.